Try to Map the Ocean by Offlights. Read by Night Tracer. Fandom, Hockey RPF, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Hey, has anyone heard from Sid lately? Though it sounds like Jordan is addressing the locker room at large, by the time his words register for Gino, and he looks up to think about his answer, it is clear he's only talking to Gino. The rest of the team, milling about, shower fresh and changing after practice, isn't paying attention. And Gino frowns slightly at Jordan's patient, unapologetic face.
Not his keeper,
Gino says, automatic at this point, because this is something he has had to insist the entire time Sydney has been injured. It's to the point where the words no longer feel all that foreign on his tongue, joining a slowly growing handful of other English phrases. And he doesn't like to think about how many of those phrases have to do with Sydney. Also familiar is the disbelieving chuckle Jordan answers him with, shrugging and going back to yanking on his sweatshirt.
Whatever you say, Gino,
Jordan says, muffled in the shirt, and Gino blinks disgruntled at the feeling of deja vu. Seriously, though, it's been days since he called me up to complain about how shitty daytime TV is or whatever. Has he been calling you? Gino shrugs because the answer is no, and he doesn't have the will or the words to really discuss how bothered and guilty that makes him feel. He and Sydney had had their own version of the not his keeper conversation a little less than a week ago, and it had involved Sydney snapping about hovering and boundaries, while somehow also complaining about being left out of the team loop. Gino had protested the hovering accusation once he understood what Sid meant by it, and that what he meant was actually back off. However, indelicately, Gino is not so clueless that he can confuse friendship with hovering, though it's obvious that Sydney is. But pointing this out was hard, especially with a Sydney that had made up his mind to be annoyed with the world that day. Jordan's right, though, in that Sydney's annoyance with the world seems to have lasted a week, and Gino confirms this by checking his phone as he slides it into his pocket. Not that he needs to. He knows Sydney hasn't called him. He could have guessed, without Jordan saying so, that he hadn't called anyone. Sydney is pouting, that much is obvious. And Gino almost feels foolish for thinking that he should probably go check on him anyway. Jordan is back to chatting with the guys, fully dressed and no longer concerned. As if he's sure that that's exactly what Gino will do, Gino would take offence, protest some more, and repeat, not his keeper, maybe, until his face goes blue, and English starts to feel like his first language. But he can't deny that he's once again rationalising the hovering instincts. Sydney has never had a Russian mother. He doesn't know that this is the tip of the hovering iceberg. Gino knows. He's only cooked for Sydney once throughout this whole ordeal, and that had been because he knew his own mother would never allow someone to subsist solely on protein shakes and candy, and would not have raised her son to allow it either. So it is with a grim mix of resignation and righteousness that he bundles up and waves farewell to his teammates, who all wave back and grin when Jordan calls out, "Say hi to Sid for us." Gino stubbornly ignores the flush he feels creeping up his neck, and is grateful his scarf covers it. He is a good friend. This is the right thing to do. And his mother would be proud. Sydney's car is in his driveway, further confirming Gino's pouting suspicions. He doesn't pause to examine the fact that he can picture Sydney exactly as he probably is, lying on his couch watching TV turned to an embarrassing show he'll scramble to turn off when Gino walks in. This is why Gino foregoes ringing the bell and just lets himself in with his key, vowing that if Sydney bitches at him about boundaries again, he'll just remind him who gave him the key in the first place.
"Hello?"
Gino calls because the TV is on, but Sydney hasn't jumped up from the couch yet, scowling blearily, with his hair stupidly sticking up on one side. Gino inwardly scolds himself but wanting to smile at the image, and peeks over the back of the couch, frowning over its emptiness. The hallway is empty too, and so is the bathroom. So Gino heads into the kitchen. Sydney would turn the TV off if he went upstairs to work out. And also, he knows he's not supposed to be pushing himself yet, and knows Gino won't hesitate to rat him out to his trainers if he thinks he is. When there's no one in the kitchen, Gino sighs in annoyance and prepares to turn to head up to Sydney's weight room. He stops when he hears a rustle and notices that the freezer door is halfway open. His breath leaves him in one sharp swoop, followed by a pained sort of chuckle, because there is a penguin in Sydney's freezer. Beak buried under his wing and sandwiched between the freezer wall and a stack of ice packs.
"Sydney, you idiot," he says.
And the penguin's head snaps up, his beady black eyes staring straight at Gino with unwavering, uncomfortable focus. Gino waves a little, starting to sweat. He's pretty sure it's not legal to keep penguins anywhere but zoos, and it's not a good idea for Sydney to keep any kind of animal in his house for any length of time, concussion or not. There is a graveyard full of dead houseplants that are a testament to that, and Gino has very pointedly shut down any wistful conversations leading to any other conclusion by offering his own pets for Sydney to visit any time he likes.
"Idiot," he repeats, in Russian this time, because he really, really means it.
And he watches as the penguin twitches again. Then, the penguin lets out a terrible, loud, shrieking noise and pretty much throws itself away from the wall of the freezer. It does a sort of slide towards the opening, still screeching in a way that sounds nearly hysterical. And Gino watches with a slick sort of horror as the penguin nearly topples over the edge of the freezer, flapping its wings and knocking an empty ice cube tray down to the floor. Gino reaches out and grabs on instinct, swearing harshly when the flapping and screeching doesn't stop. He gets a wing in the face a few times, and the beak comes dangerously close to nipping at its cheek. But the penguin isn't very big or well coordinated. Webbed feet kick uselessly away from a rounded feathered bottom, and Gino holds a penguin far away from his body and gapes at it.
"Sorry,"
he says in English, because maybe speaking in Russian had upset the bird. Maybe Sydney has been starving it, or trying to feed it protein shakes, or had forgotten about it while working out.
"Is okay. I not. You hungry?"
The penguin screeches more, piercing and high and ghastly, and Gino winces and promptly gives up. He places the penguin as gently on the counter as he can, and has to force down his own hysterics as he watches the penguin flap itself sideways into Sydney's stainless steel sink.
"Sydney!"
Gino yells, and the penguin flaps harder, squawking loud enough that Gino is suddenly worried about the neighbours hearing from miles away.
"Stop that!"
he hisses at the penguin. And another,
"Sydney, I know you're here."
The penguin rights itself in the sink and might actually be glaring at Gino if such a thing is possible. Gino wants to explain that he's not the one that left it in a freezer to possibly starve, then realises he's preparing to defend himself to a penguin and holds his hands up.
"Okay, I find him and get you food. Shut up, please."
A blood-curdling screech is his only answer, and Gino sighs and backs out of the kitchen. There is a headache pressing in from the back of his neck, and the penguin seems to have taken personal insult to Gino's instructions to quiet down, evidenced by his long, wailing screeches. He tries to concentrate on just finding Sydney and making him explain, but the weight room is empty, and so is the rest of the house, and Gino doesn't know what to do with that. He sweeps through empty rooms because Sydney has been living on his own for a while now, and still doesn't know how to take up space. And he tries to keep the panic out of his voice as he keeps calling for Sydney, even though there's no Sydney to hear it. Gino thinks that maybe he went out for a run and resolves to wait, but when he returns to the kitchen and relays this plan to the penguin, it is received by more, somehow louder, screeching.
"I don't know what you want," Gino says mournfully. "We wait for Sydney."
He closes his eyes against a horrible screech, dropping his head into his hands. He looks up briefly when the screeching dies down, and chokes on a laugh, as he sees the penguin attempting and failing to climb out of the sink.
"We wait," he repeats,
watching the penguin and meeting his tiny accusing eyes. But Sydney doesn't come back, and the penguin never shuts up. Gino tries calling his cell and groans when he hears it ringing on the kitchen table, plugged into a wall charger. He paces around the kitchen, offering the penguin frozen waffles from the floor, and apologizes again before he realizes what he's doing.
"I don't know where he is,"
Gino tells the penguin. The penguin shrieks in indignation. Gino glares at it and tries to be angry for getting stuck with this. He is not Sydney's keeper, and he is certainly not this penguin's keeper, and he does not appreciate being made into one. Being angry about it is better than the sickening worry that's starting to creep in. Worry that intensifies when he pokes around some more and notices more of Sydney's stuff around. His wallet, all of his cold weather gear, rows of running shoes that Gino is embarrassed to be able to tell that none are missing from. His house keys on the kitchen table near his phone. Sydney wouldn't leave without all of this stuff. Not even in his sorriest state of misery. He's just too practical, too much of a thinker. None of this is like him. And none of it makes sense. He returns to pacing in the kitchen, worry starting to eat at him more and more. And the penguin seems to grow more agitated the more Gino paces. He has a full-blown headache now, his hand pressed to his forehead, stomach churning, as he tells himself all he can do is wait. He doesn't want to start calling people that Sydney knows and asking after him. Doesn't want to sound the alarm with broken English and panicked, probably irrational inquiries. A Sydney Crosby without hockey is apparently crazy enough to acquire a penguin as a pet. But Gino has to tell himself he's not crazy enough to do anything worse than that. The penguin is still in the sink, despite concentrated and squawking efforts to climb out of it. Feeling utterly useless, Gino sighs and picks the penguin up, planning to put it back in the freezer. At least Sid had had the right idea about climate. He decides the next thing to do is turn Sydney's thermostat as low as it will go, and he's planning to do that when the penguin freaks out in his hold again and winds up flapping itself out of Gino's hands. Thankfully, it doesn't fall very far, landing with a thud on the stool pushed against the counter as Gino swears at it in his native tongue. The penguin glares at him like he understands him perfectly and with awkward fumbling movements hops off the stool to the floor.
"Where are you going?" Gino asks,
watching with a small twinge in his chest as the penguin starts waddling purposefully across the tiled floor. Its feet make small slapping sounds, and its feathers are ruffled in indignation. It gives a squawk and a look over his shoulder at Gino, head turned at a sharp angle. Gino shrugs and follows, biting his bottom lip as he watches the penguin resume its determined march. It's terribly cute, and this is a terrible time to think so, but Gino can't help it. The penguin is slow and its steps are uncertain, and Gino inches along behind him so he doesn't overtake him or kick him. He is led to the pantry, which Gino hadn't looked in because the pantry isn't one of Sydney's natural habitats in this house. His candy stash is in a safe spot hidden in the living room, where only Gino knows to judge it. And his meals at home are very rare. The only reason the pantry is even stocked is because of Sydney's mother, horrified at the sparse state of Sydney's kitchen. Gino is fairly sure that most of the food in there has been untouched since purchased. Probably because Sydney just forgot about it. But maybe the penguin thinks there's food in there for him. Gino leans around the open pantry door and peers into the small shelved room and blinks to see the light on. He blinks again when he sees the penguin has come to a stop in front of a pile of clothes on the floor that looks worryingly familiar. The penguin squawks, loud and with clear intent, and Gino's stomach turns over as the penguin then points to the clothes with one short wing. He says,
"Sid,"
without actually meaning to, and when the penguin meets his eyes and makes a softer sort of trill, Gino's knees start to wobble. He says,
head. Sid, again, and dropped to his knees slowly, reaching around the penguin for the clothes. The penguin's logo on the t-shirt and the Reebok tag on the sweatpants would be enough to identify them as Sid's, but Gino can smell them too. And his heart pounds because he can smell Sydney. The penguin trills again, still looking at Gino, and waddles closer to him, blinking up at him, in a way that flashes recognition through him very painfully. Gino says, "Sydney." And this time, he isn't looking at anything, anyone, but the penguin. Because the penguin is Sydney.
"How this happen?"
Gino asks for the third time. And Sydney doesn't answer him because he is a penguin. Well, it's not entirely true that Sydney doesn't answer him. He just doesn't answer in sound that Gino can't understand because, Gino reminds himself hysterically, he is a penguin! Instead, he lets out another mournful, frustrated-sounding screech that also manages to sound strangely whiny. Though that may just be because Gino knows who it's coming from. Gino is back to pacing around the kitchen, running his fingers through his hair and shivering. He had turned Sydney's thermostat as low as possible, and it's below freezing outside, so Sydney should be fairly comfortable in his penguin form. It's Gino who can't stop shaking, and he knows it's only partly from the cold. Sydney is still screeching, flapping his wings emphatically, like Gino will understand that any better. His headache is still there, throbbing through his chilled skull, and he presses his fingers against the bridge of his nose. Sydney does not take the hint, which isn't very surprising. Sid is bad at taking hints in human form, too. He keeps babbling in penguin speak, even when Gino slumps over the island counter and groans piteously. His penguin voice is awful, high, and so screechy, worse even, than Sydney's human voice when throwing a fit on the ice. And Gino knows there's something truly wrong with him when he realizes that he misses that voice, with an ache that cuts him to the quick.
"Please," Gino says, "quiet, just for a minute, Sid."
Maybe he sounds truly pitiful, because Sydney obeys, though he doesn't stop flapping his wings. His small chest is puffed out when Gino looks down at him. And again, Gino feels ridiculous and awful for thinking it looks cute. He wisely fights down a smile, knowing it would look alarming with his teeth and his chattering. And it would probably set Sydney off again.
"You understand,"
Gino says slowly, and he winces as Sydney's beak opens up immediately, wings spreading wide. But slowly, his beak closes again, and he looks almost speculatively up at Gino, before bobbing his long neck very slowly. It's a clumsy, sweet motion, and Gino can't hold back his smile then, gritting his teeth together and feeling something small loosen slightly inside of him.
"Good. You nod or shake head, and I talk, okay?"
Sydney bobs again, wings settling slightly at his sides, but his chest staying puffed up. Gino stands up a little straighter and screws up his resolve, mind racing and desperate for answers.
"So you in pantry, and then you, just penguin, just like that?"
Sydney nods so hard he wobbles on his feet a little. Gino smothers another smile into his hand and scrubs over his face before he can trust himself with words again.
"When?"
It's a stupid question, and the look Sydney gives him, somehow as a penguin, Sydney is still capable of looks. Still his captain, who can tell him off with just a flash of his eyes. And that's maybe the most ridiculous thing about all this. Tells him so. Gino groans a little and quickly amends.
"Long time? Days? Week?"
He gets a small squawk and a clumsy shake of Sid's head, again almost upsetting his balance. Gino wonders with a clench of his gut, if this is Sydney being unused to his penguin body. If penguins are just that graceless outside of water. Or if this is a concussion symptom showing in Sydney as a penguin. The last option is terrible to think of, and so Gino can't voice any of them, swallowing hard and forcing out,
"Today, Sid."
Yes, today. And Sydney elaborates by waddling unsteadily over to the stool by the counter and struggling to climb up onto it, with his feet on the rungs and his wings tucking his body onto the seat. He uses his beak, too, to latch on to the back of the stool and climb up those rungs, before tumbling messily onto the counter. He hops up onto the toaster on the counter, and with much more struggling and fluffed out feathers and a clicking beak, opens the freezer door again and hauls himself inside.
You do that, but you can't get out of sync, Gino says,
to keep from breaking out into hysterical giggles that are building in his chest. Half because that was maybe the cutest thing he's ever seen an animal do, and half because it was so ridiculously Sydney that it's absurd. Sydney squawks in irritation, but he seems stupidly smug, too, beak up in the air, as he settles back against the ice packs. Gino smothers another smile and shakes his head, breathing out shakily.
Okay, it's okay. You don't have to climb anymore. I am here.
He feels steadier as he says it, the panic and hysteria of the situation slowly starting to fade as a more familiar role becomes apparent. Gino doesn't know how to fix this, as much as he wants to, as much as he's shivering with the need to. But he knows that he can help Sydney in the meantime. Will help Sydney in the meantime. Because there's really nothing else for him to do. Sydney's beak is still in the air, like he might be trying for defiance. But Gino just stares him down. He's not going to have a not-his-keeper argument right now. Not when Sydney is a penguin and needs a keeper. He needs someone to help him hide this too, and Gino is here. Maybe it would be Gino, even if he hadn't been the first one here. But he doesn't have to think about that. Just shakes his head quickly and locks onto Sydney's eye steadily. He doesn't say, "You need me," even though it's technically true. And he doesn't defend his hovering tendencies again. Doesn't try to rationalize them. Gino just says,
"I am here. Again."
And he reaches carefully into the freezer to cup his hand gently over Sydney's small head. He rubs with just one finger, and slowly Sydney's beak lowers. His chest evens out, his wings relaxing further at his side. And though he is still staring at Gino with a spark of steadfast determination, he nods very slightly. His feathers are soft under Gino's touch, and Gino lets himself smile and nod back.
"How is Sid?"
asks a text from Flower. And Gino frowns over at where Sydney is dubiously eyeing an opened can of sardines dug out of the pantry. He is not tall enough to sit at the table and eat, and seems very wary of standing on the table and bending down to pick up his soup with his beak, as if Gino is going to criticise his table manners or something. He also seems wary of the food, but Gino has a backup can of tuna ready.
"Penguins eat fish,"
Gino tells him knowledgeably, pocketing his phone and shelving Flower's concern for a while. Sydney has only been a penguin for a day, as far as he can tell, and out of contact with the team, but probably not with everyone he knows for only a week. That's not long enough to start making excuses for him. He has to think up more excuses before he can do that. Gino knows that penguins eat fish because he had gone out in his laptop and googled penguin behaviour with fingers that are now growing numb with cold. He'd winced at the many low temperature instances and glanced uneasily at the thermostat, knowing it's probably still not cold enough in here for Sydney. He's going to have to figure that out. And he adds it to the alarming list growing in his head. Here is what he knows. Sydney is a Gen 2 penguin, identified with pictures, and smaller than the Emperor penguins Gino knows by sight because of the team name. Gen 2 penguins actually prefer krill to fish, but somehow Sydney doesn't have any krill on hand, so they have to make do with the fish until Gino can find krill. There is so much more that he doesn't know, and he's trying not to think about that. He doesn't know how Sydney came to be a penguin, doesn't know how to get Sydney to not be a penguin anymore, and Gino thinks that those are maybe the most important things to know. He feels his brows draw together, and notes rationally that doing an internet search for my friend and teammate is a penguin, help would not actually bear useful results, and his fingers are too cold to type much more anyway. Sydney is still not eating, making small trills at the food, and Gino turns to look at him more directly, and refuses to back down from the defiant look he receives in return.
"Eat," he says,
comforting himself with the fact that they'd probably be having the same conversation if Sydney were human. He gets another, louder trill in return, but Sydney finally bends over and clumsily snags a piece of fish in his beak with a click. He drops it twice, but manages to snap it into his mouth on the third try, angling his back towards Gino like he can hide his mistakes. Gino ducks his gaze and smiles down at his own folded hands, watching Sydney out of the corner of his eye because he can't actually ignore him. And maybe that's always a little true. Whatever. But he thinks he's pretty justified right now. With a clicking beak and lots of neck bobbing, Sydney demolishes the can of sardines fast enough that Gino knows he'd been hungry. After, he tries to climb into the freezer again, squawking indignantly when Gino picks him up and helps, but settling down easily enough inside.
"You can't stay here," Gino says. "Is not going to stay cold."
Sydney gives him a very unimpressed look, beak in the air again, and Gino rolls his eyes and adds,
"Good idea, though."
To keep the peace, he does not want another penguin tantrum. Sydney hooks his beak onto the freezer door and tries to close it, and Gino grabs it and shakes his head, watching Sid tug uselessly for a minute before giving up.
"You can't breathe, Sid."
He looks around the room thoughtfully, keeping hold of the freezer door in case Sydney wants to be stubborn.
"We find something else. I find. Stay here."
It's only a question out of politeness, really. Gino pulls the freezer door as far open as it will go and ignores Sydney squawking to look for the door to the basement. Acting on a hunch, he flicks on a light and finds the much larger upright freezer. He remembers Sydney's mother stocking with meat when she'd gone after the pantry. All of the meat is still in there, and Gino feels guilty taking it out because now how will Sydney get through the next apocalypse without his endless supply of frozen meat? But the end result is a roomy space with a door he can prop slightly open for air, and enough power to keep it very cold anyway. Pleased, Gino turns to go back upstairs and rolls his eyes at Sydney, waddling over at the top of the stairs, peering down at him.
"I say to," Gino starts,
and Sydney just cuts him off with a screech and starts hopping down the stairs.
"You go in here when you get too hot," Gino says,
after Sydney tumbles down the last few steps and pokes his beak at the freezer curiously. Gino is willing to bet that Sydney didn't even remember that this freezer was here, and is glad for it. He doesn't like the idea of Sydney up and down these stairs by himself, and wonders if he can move the freezer upstairs without getting anyone else involved. Probably not. And doesn't know how he'd explain needing that kind of help to the guys, so he just resolves to carry Sid up and down, no matter how many tantrums he throws. Sydney has to inspect the freezer's insides before he pokes Gino's leg with his beak, in what's probably approval. Gino asks,
"You want sleep?"
and gestures inside, resolving to pull over the cot in the corner and grab a mountain of blankets and just stay down here with Sid, because of the stairs problem. Sydney answers him by waddling back towards the stairs, and he nips at Gino's wrist when he's picked up again. But Gino says,
"Sid, don't be dick,"
and hefts him upstairs.
"I tell everyone you bite me," Gino says,
setting Sydney down again, and watching him try to stalk off. Sid scowls at him over his shoulder, and Gino grins.
"They think you human. Weirder, then. Don't bite, Sid."
Sydney does not answer him, turns away, and just waddles around. Gino can see him trying to walk more naturally, taking more careful steps and going slower, and he leaves him to it, picking up his phone again and thinking about what he's going to tell Flower and anyone else who asks about Sid.
"He is fine," Gino taps out, and then adds, "Tell the guys," so he doesn't have to field questions from the whole team all night.
He sighs a bit when he gets back. "Take care of him," and a winking smiley face, and watches Sydney trip on the living room carpet, squawking on his belly.
"I try,"
he answers and grabs at the laptop again. He borrows a scarf and gloves from Sydney, and sets himself up in the living room with the laptop, reading more about penguins, and watching Sydney try to navigate carpeting. The thing is, Gino can't actually stay here forever, and so the comforts he tries to set up for Sydney are all set up with short-term in mind. Sydney can't stay a penguin forever. The idea is unthinkable. So the freezer, and the fish, and the krill he's trying to find online are all temporary fixes. Gino can make hot chocolate in Sydney's kitchen, and he can bundle up on Sydney's couch, and he can call his housekeeper and make sure she feeds his pets. He can watch Sydney crow in triumph when he makes his way across the living room without falling over, and he can smile at that all he wants, Sydney too absorbed in his own victory to notice. But he can't stop worrying. He can't stop thinking about how he has to be in New York for a game in 2 days. And there are home games after that and practice every day. And he doesn't know what he can do if Sydney doesn't turn back before then. Sydney has to be just as worried, but he doesn't show it, as far as Gino can tell. He just determinedly makes his way around the ground floor of his house, as Gino watches him. He eyes the stairs to the second floor, then shoots a look at Gino before waddling back to the kitchen. Gino finishes his hot chocolate, rubs his temples, and finds Sydney pecking and pulling at his back door. His feathers ruffle slightly when Gino opens it for him, but he waddles out into the yard with his head up and hops down the short stairs before Gino can grab him.
Sid,
Gino says warningly, but Sydney ignores him to start pecking at snow and eating it. Gino shrugs, rubbing his arms around himself and sitting on the stairs to watch him, breath misting out in front of him.
Stairs scary, hard. You fall and hit head again, and then what?
Sydney lets out a mournful sort of trill and stops eating snow to twist his neck again. And Gino reaches out before he can stop himself, petting Sydney's head once more. This time Sydney twists away, and then falls over into the snow, and Gino laughs and refuses to feel bad about it. Gino sleeps in the basement, despite Sydney's many screech protests, under a pile of every blanket in the house and full winter gear. Sydney sleeps in the freezer with his beak tucked under his wing, and his spare puck keeping the door propped slightly open. Gino sleeps fitfully, not just from the cold, but also to lie awake and listen to the almost purr-like sounds of Sydney breathing. In the morning, he wakes up to the freezer door banging closed, and Sydney halfway to the stairs. He looks half asleep and keeps shaking out his wings at his sides, but he is awake enough to be annoyed with Gino picking him up again to carry him upstairs. Sydney barely misses Gino's thumb with a slashing, sharp beak. And Gino scowls at him and pointedly googles, "Can penguins get concussions?" while Sydney eats a tuna for breakfast. Gino scowls harder when all the results are about human Sydney's concussion, and he closes the laptop and concentrates on his flavourless cereal.
"Have practice,"
Gino says apologetically, and Sydney flaps a wing at him, either in dismissal or acceptance or annoyance. Gino doesn't know.
"I come back," he adds firmly. "Don't go downstairs. I lock the door. You get hot, you go in this freezer, or you go in the yard. Careful, Sid."
This flapping is definitely annoyance because it's accompanied by a squawk. Gino sighs and finishes his cereal and worries. He worries through leaving out more fish for Sydney, packing snowballs into the kitchen freezer in case Sydney doesn't want to go outside. He worries through stopping home to change and pet his cat and hug his dog, sighing in gratitude when they just love him unconditionally and accept his love back. Cats and dogs make much easier pets than penguins, and better best friends. Unsurprisingly, all this worrying does nothing good for him at practice. He is glad that he changed out of yesterday's clothes, because the guys are giving him enough shit about taking care of Sydney anyway.
"God, he's probably a nightmare right now, isn't he?"
Max says, half sympathetic and half amused. And Gino's back goes straight with defensiveness for a moment, before his shoulders slump because, well, yeah, Sydney kind of is a nightmare right now. He's just a penguin nightmare, instead of a human nightmare, so Gino can't hold it against him. That doesn't stop him from feeling desperate to get back to Sydney's house, even though he forces himself to take his time, to concentrate on his game. He can't imagine the hissy fit Sydney would throw if he knew that he was distracting Gino from practice. Somehow the thought is comforting, and it helps a little. He politely declines invitations to go out later, though Max is quick to tell him, "Bring Sid! He needs to get out. We'll get a couple of beers in him, and maybe find someone to turn his nightmares into some sweet dreams." This is accompanied by a dramatic eyebrow waggle, as if it needs any more sleaze. Gino dislikes that idea on many different levels, and Flower seems to know that immediately, because he adds, "Or he can drown his injuries, sadness in drinks, okay? Water. And we can give him whining amnesty for the night. Just bring him, Gino." But Gino is already shaking his head, mumbling excuses for them both that aren't comprehensible on purpose. He gracefully withstands the accusations of being boring and married, despite the fact that only boring makes sense in this context. But he's sure the stress of the situation is muddling his English comprehension skills. Geordi clasps him on the back and tells him he's a good bro, which Gino already knew because he doesn't know of many bros that would take care of their penguin best friends without dumping them in a zoo or attempting to dress them up and take pictures. He is an excellent bro, and if Sydney tries to bite him again, Gino will remind him of that. Gino brings his warmest clothes to Sydney's house and finds him in the backyard. There are tiny footprints all over the latest midday snowfall, and Sydney is a black and white blur rolling around in it. Gino grins, uncontrollable and warm in the bitterly cold air, and watches. He listens to Sydney's trilling, soft like it's not on purpose, and he can almost hear human Sydney humming to himself in the locker room, happy and satisfied after a good game. If Sydney were human, Gino rationalizes, he would totally pack up a snowball as stealthily as possible and throw it at him. So it seems natural to do it to Penguin Sid. He doesn't think about how he would probably never catch human Sid playing in the snow, and just winds up and lets the snowball loose, laughing when Sydney jumps and squawks upon contact. Snow falls in chunks from Sydney's coat to feathers as he shakes himself all over, and Gino only feels guilty when Sydney draws himself up and stands in the snow, instead of continuing to roll around. His chest puffs out, and Gino holds on to his grin, shrugging a little.
"I want to play too."
Sydney squawks and bends, flapping at the ground with his wings, and screeching in frustration when he can't gather anything up. Gino laughs again and heads over to him, sits down, and ignores the cold seeping in through his jeans.
"You're right, is not fair. I have thumbs. I win."
That's answered by much more violent flapping and also kicking, and Gino lies down and lets Sydney try for his payback as he concentrates on making a snow angel. Sydney stomps through the left angel wing, screeching and flapping, and he pecks at Gino's leather gloves when Gino doesn't look properly chastised. Gino lets him, too charmed to feel bothered about the biting thing, though he'll make fun of Sydney for this mercilessly when he's human again. That thought makes his stomach sink, twisting uncomfortably because there's still the question of when exactly Sydney will be human again. Sydney seems to pick up on the mood change and stops attacking Gino's hand to peer down at his face. Gino looks up at him, blinking against sudden soft snow flurries, and smiles genuinely, because he has to, when Sydney's looking at him like that.
"Hi, Sid," he says,
and he hopes Sydney had fun today. Back inside, he has to rethink playing in the snow when he can't get warm again, and he and Sydney have another screechy fight about stairs. Gino takes a hot shower and layers himself in warm clothes, then snuggles under a comforter mound on Sydney's couch while Sydney watches him from the floor. Gino says,
"What?"
when Sydney watches him for too long, and he frowns when Sydney points to the front door with a wing and squawks.
"You won't go out front?"
Sydney shakes his head and squawks again, then pecks at Gino's car keys on the coffee table. Gino chuckles.
"You kicking me out?"
Yes, Sydney's eyes clearly say, solidifying in a fast, firm nod that nearly unbalances him. Gino slumps further down in his blanket bundle and turns on Sydney's TV, settling.
"No, I stay with you."
He ignores the subsequent tantrum Sydney throws, turning the TV up as loud as it goes and trying to concentrate on the subtitles to drown Sydney's screeching out.
"You concerned about cold? You come up and cuddle," Gino tells him,
and he expects it to shut Sydney up. but he doesn't expect it to make him freeze, staring at Gino like he's grown a second head. Which is rich, coming from someone who has turned into a penguin.
Kidding, Sid, Gino says,
feeling ridiculous for explaining himself to a penguin, and for being so unsettled by the need to. He should know better, though, because it's Sidney, who only ever tolerates hugs off the ice, as opposed to enjoying them. Excessive displays of affection that aren't related to scoring goals tend to make him uncomfortable as a general rule, and Gino doesn't know why he'd even entertained the thought that being turned into a seriously adorable creature would change that. There is no cuddling that night, though there is a dinner in front of the TV that's lean enough to remind Gino that he has to get groceries in this house at some point. Sidney declines more fish and tries to drag a bag of M&Ms out of his candy stash. He almost has the bag open when Gino catches him and tells him he will most definitely choke.
No candy for penguins, Gino says.
And the look Sidney gives him nearly makes him rethink sleeping in the basement with him, in case Sid decides to peck him to death in his sleep. Another squawking argument about the stairs caps off their night. And even though Gino is shivering and too tall for this cot, he starts dozing off immediately. Maybe he's getting hypothermia. And the thought isn't as alarming as it probably should be, since hypothermia would theoretically get him scratched from a few games, and would be pretty unfortunate in general.
Maybe tomorrow you not be a penguin, Gino says sleepily.
And Sidney's only answer is a muffled, annoyed little squawk. The next morning, Sidney is still a penguin, and is still not happy about being carried up the stairs. Gino should probably be sick of getting bitten and pecked by now, but he eyes the shallow red marks on his arms with the same kind of resignation he'd felt about the possibility of hypothermia. His relationship with human Sid has never been this abusive, exactly, though they've had similar points of contention in the past. He knows that Sidney hates not being in control. Knows that's what he's hated most about this whole concussion thing. And he gets that this must be 10 times worse than that. But Gino can't help wanting to help. And he can't imagine not helping if he can. That goes for concussed Sid and for penguin Sid. And he doesn't bother explaining that to him because he's not sure that Sidney will ever get it. He doesn't quite get it himself, which is fine because it doesn't change the way he feels.
Game tomorrow,
Gino says. And Sidney bobs his head stiffly and doesn't meet Gino's eyes. This is different from human Sid, who had never shut up about the games he had to sit out before or after.
Game day after, too. I go to New York and I come back, but...
Sidney squawks and heads out towards the yard without letting Gino finish. Gino doesn't think he's ever seen a penguin brood before, not even in captivity. But of course, Sidney is the first to manage it. He prepares Sidney as much as possible for his time away, stocking the fridge with so many opening containers of fish and the more elusive but adored krill that it will probably stink for weeks. He thinks seriously about trying to lug the basement freezer upstairs, but sighs and concede the point eventually, leaving the door to the stairs open and making Sidney promise to be careful as best he can. It doesn't make travelling to New York any easier, and Gino can barely enjoy the warmth and comfort of his hotel room. He wears gloves to bed out of habit, and Max gives him a weird look and says, "How are things with Sidney?" Because apparently that's the only topic of conversation that is ever relevant anymore.
"Things fine," Gino says,
grumpily peeling off his gloves and shoving them in his overnight bag. Max narrows his eyes at him.
"You sure you haven't killed him and buried his body in the yard? Not that I blame you, really. I know how he gets, but..." "He is fine," Gino says.
His voice shakes on the final note of that, because what if he's not fine? What if he tried to toboggan down his basement steps and gave himself another concussion? Gino wishes that penguins could answer phones, because he could call right now and check on him. Except he doesn't think even human Sid would answer that call, just out of spite. "I'm sure he is," Max says soothingly, and he's rummaging through the minibar, like that's going to help this conversation at all. I mean, except for how he's sidelined from the thing he loves most, and he won't talk to any of his friends, and...
"He talked to me," Gino snaps,
and helplessly thinks also he is a penguin. Max rolls his eyes. "Yeah, but you're you. You're different. I'm talking about the rest of us, the mere mortals. His friends, not his... his Gino.
I am his friend.
Max snorts, offers Gino a tiny bottle of vodka, and snorts again when he shakes his head. Okay, so you're still sticking to that line. Cool. My point is, he's in a funk. It's obvious. And he's putting you in a funk by association, and that's not helping anybody. Gino wants to know what line he's sticking to, because he feels like he's understanding less and less this conversation as it progresses. But suddenly, he doesn't have the energy to puzzle that all out, or the English, and so he leans back in bed and presses the palms of weirdly cold hands and says,
"How we help, then?"
Because helping is part of the problem. He can hear the shrug in Max's voice and smell the open bottles of alcohol. Fucked if I know. I'm not good with drama, Gino. This is more Flower's area of expertise. He doesn't know what drama Max is talking about, because to Gino, there's really no drama besides the penguin situation, and Max doesn't know about that. There's only Sid acting like Sid. And it's just made worse because he's a penguin, and it's a tough situation. As soon as Sidney's human again, things will go back to normal, and everything will be fine. Gino's sure of it. Except, 2 games later, which are thankfully 2 wins, and he's looking forward to telling Sid about that at least, penguin or human, Gino goes back to Sydney's house, and he is still a penguin. The kitchen is a mess of open containers and stinks of seafood. And there is melting snow tracked in from the yard. But what really drives the penguin point home is the nest Gino finds in the basement, a mix of rocks from the yard that he winces to think of Sydney carrying in with his beak, and a small pile of blankets that Gino had been using on the cot. Here is where he finds Sydney, curled in on himself, with his beak tucked under his wing again. And he is still a penguin, and Gino's heart feels full and heavy to look at him.
"Sid," he says softly,
and Sidney wakes up with a small squawk and a jolt. He blinks at Gino crouched down in front of him, looks down at his nest, and shuffles away from it, then keeps looking up at Gino until Gino smiles at him tentatively.
"Okay?"
Gino asks, wincing a little and expecting a protest. But Sidney just lets out a soft trill and shuffles closer to him. Gino takes that as tacit permission to reach down and run his fingers lightly over Sidney's feathered head, smiling wider when Sidney doesn't jerk away. He goes a little stiff but trills again, and when Gino goes to pull back, he pushes up just slightly, and suddenly, Gino doesn't feel any of the cold, even though the freezer door is open right next to him.
"Good,"
Gino says. Like Sidney's answered an important question.
"You hungry?"
Sidney answers by waddling over to the stairs, and obviously he'd been navigating them fine while Gino had been gone. So Gino is prepared to ignore the twitching urge to carry him, just to avoid another fight. But Sidney waits at the front of the stairs, twists his neck, and gives a little squawk. And Gino likes to think he has more pride than to scramble to his feet and over to Sidney, but maybe not. There's no biting when he picks Sidney up. And if Gino tucks Sidney into his side a little more securely, neither of them acknowledge it, so it's fine.
"I miss you,"
Gino says, maybe bravely, watching Sidney attack a plate of krill. And Sidney avoids looking at him in a way that makes him suspect that maybe,
possibly,
Sidney had missed him too. They settle into something of a routine after that. If having a penguin for a best friend can be considered anything close to normal in any universe. They spend an off day together with next to no arguments or biting, and very little disgruntled screeching. Gino feels like he's won 3 games in a row instead of 2. It's a nice feeling. There is only a small brush up when Gino catches Sidney trying to turn the thermostat up with his beak, poking at the buttons, making low, grumpy noises. Gino says,
"You cold?"
disbelievingly. And Sidney looks back at him, just as disbelievingly, and looks pointedly at Gino's trembling gloved fingers, and up at his hat pulled down over his ears. And Gino presses his lips together.
"I am okay, Sid. You get hot. You get sick. Computers say."
Sidney's chest puffs out, and Gino knows he's in for another tantrum, but this one doesn't last as long. At least they're making progress. Sidney goes off in the yard, and Gino huddles on his couch, and they take a break from each other, and when Sydney waddles back in, he even climbs onto the coffee table and uses that to jump onto the couch.
"Game,"
Sydney says, pointing to the TV, a peace offering. Sydney doesn't huddle close to him or anything, just settles back against the cushions and chills a little, feet sticking out in front of him. And Gino hides a smile by staring straight ahead. Later, he checks the thermostat again to make sure Sydney hadn't succeeded in raising the temperature, because he feels oddly warm for the rest of the night. As things become easier with Sydney at home, at Sydney's home, Gino corrects himself, glad that he's not thinking this way out loud. It becomes harder to fend off questions about him from the team. Harder still is answering the questions from Dan and then Mario, and Gino will never really understand being thanked by his boss for taking good care of Sid, when he doesn't even know that Sydney is a penguin.
"I try,"
Gino says, which is what he always says because it's what's true. He can only ever try to take good care of Sid, human or not. Mario seems satisfied with this, though, giving Gino a firm, approving nod. And Gino is too grateful to be able to escape from this conversation to think about it much. The hardest line of questioning by far, though, comes through a phone call he gets on his way to Sid's house. He can already feel a sense of foreboding when he sees Sergei's name come up on the phone display. And really, he shouldn't answer. He's driving. He'd be perfectly in the right to ignore Sergei's call. But Gino sighs and answers because, as much as he'd like to be, he's never going to be the kind of person to ignore calls in good conscience.
"Are you living in Sidney Crosby's house?"
Sergei says. And Gino groans and very seriously considers hanging up. It's been long enough since they've talked, though, that Sergei's Russian almost seems unfamiliar. Gino has grown too used to listening to English and penguin, and so maybe he needs some perspective from home.
"How do you know that?"
Gino asks faintly, and hears Sergei sigh in return, which really isn't necessary or warranted at all. Gino thinks he should have the market cornered on heavy, long-suffering sighs. His best friend has somehow turned into a penguin.
"Your housekeeper told me that you've abandoned Dixie and Jeffrey, and there are very few people you would abandon your animals for. Most of them live in Russia. Why are you living with him, Xenia? Do you like causing yourself pain?"
Obviously he does, or he wouldn't be having this conversation. But Gino grits his teeth together and grinds them until he comes up with an answer that sounds less pathetic and desperate than he feels.
"I'm not living with him. I am just keeping him company. Max says he is in a funk."
"And what about you?" Sergei asks, firm but not unkind. Gino rolls his eyes.
"He can't play hockey, so he needs someone. I'm his friend, so I'm helping him. I would do the same for you."
He can practically hear Sergei rolling his eyes in response to that. And Gino huffs in affront and tightens his hands around his steering wheel. He takes a left turn more recklessly than he normally would in Pittsburgh. Everyone takes left turns recklessly in Pittsburgh except for Gino, it seems. And realizes with more dull resignation that spending so much time with Sydney has made him no longer fear death. That can't be a sign of a healthy friendship. Maybe Sergei has a point.
"My ass, you do the same for me," Sergei says.
And Gino amends.
"Well, if we still live in the same city."
"That's not what I meant, and you know it." Sergei pauses strategically, giving Gino time to not really think about what Sergei means, because he doesn't want to. Instead, he pushes down on the gas to get to Sid's house that much faster and end this conversation that much sooner.
"Gino, Sydney is my friend,"
Gino says, eyes steady on the road.
"Sydney is your world, and you've been acting like a kid who lost his favourite toy since he's been injured,"
Sergei says. And Gino's stomach starts sinking, and it doesn't stop when Sergei adds,
"Though, to be fair, and as far as I've heard, Sydney's been acting the same way, only in his case, his favourite toy is hockey,"
Gino says sullenly. And Sergei sighs again, the worst kind of sigh. Not long-suffering, but sympathetic and pitying.
"Yes,
hockey.
I still need help in then,"
Gino says, and it's true. It's not just true because Sydney is a penguin. Penguin or not, Sydney still hasn't had hockey, and that's still a problem for him. It's just more of a problem right now. The thing is, he's not sure if he needs to help Sydney because Sydney needs help, or because, well, someone took Gino's favourite toy away, to borrow an ill-fitting phrase. Sergei doesn't sigh at him, like he'd been sort of expecting. Instead, he just sounds like he's shaking his head, and even more pitying. I know. For a second, Gino's chest clenches up, and Sydney's house coming into view. And he thinks about telling Sergei. He thinks about saying, "This is way worse than you think. Sydney is a penguin." And he wants to tell him is the thing. He doesn't want to do this alone anymore. Doesn't want to need to do this alone. And Sergei would help, somehow. If only by listening. But he can't tell him. Telling him would mean most of the Russians in the NHL finding out by dawn. And they have a game against Washington coming up. Nothing good would come out of Alex Ovechkin knowing about Sydney's penguin problem. And Sydney trusts him not to tell. At least tacitly. And Gino would never, ever betray that trust. "Zenya?" asks Sergei. And Gino forces his chest to loosen as he rolls up Sydney's driveway.
"I'm home. I have to go."
And then he swears under his breath.
"I mean, I'm at Sydney's house. Oh, fuck off, please."
Sergei is laughing at him, hard and without shame, and somehow it makes Gino feel a little better. He kind of wants to laugh at himself too. Instead, he tips his head against the steering wheel and ends the call on Sergei's laughter, before winding his scarf tight around his neck and heading inside. On his next day off, Sydney has been a penguin for over a week, and Gino is trying not to stress too hard about that. That becomes nearly impossible when, while helping Sydney gather more rocks for the nest, he still seems embarrassed about, but intent on perfecting. Gino hears Sydney's front door being pounded on, and a voice echoing far too loudly through the house. Sydney squawks and flaps around in a circle, and he has terrible timing because now Gino just wants to laugh at him, and maybe also hug him. Instead he chokes out,
"Shh, stay here,"
and hurries inside, sure he can get rid of whichever teammate wants to save them from themselves today. He's become pretty good at that. Sydney's house is a total mess. Clothes on the floor, where Gino has been hastily changing under blankets for warmth in the living room. But he refuses to feel self-conscious or defensive when he sees Jordan on the doorstep. Gino tries to block the doorway with his body and opens his mouth to start arguing him away, but Jordan just muscles past him, rubbing his hands together and frowning hard.
"Jesus Christ, it's freezing in here, Gino. Is it a popsicle?"
"Almost,"
Gino thinks helplessly, and he folds his arms around himself.
"I am on my way out, Geordie."
"Yeah? To go where?"
Jordan either knows he's full of shit or refuses to approve of wherever Gino wants to go, and Gino's shoulders slump.
"Get coffee for me and Sid," he says,
trying for defiance. Jordan just raises an eyebrow, and Gino resists the urge to stick his tongue out at him.
"Not for you."
"Sure, Gino, whatever. Where's Sydney?"
He starts wandering into the kitchen, and Gino panics. Reaching out, Jordan babbles thoughtlessly.
"I'm taking you both out because I need to save you from yourselves. You really, really need to get out of this igloo. We're going to find you frozen on the couch."
"Sid's still sleeping," Gino says,
nearly grabbing Jordan and yanking him back from the kitchen, which is too close to the yard for his comfort. But Jordan freezes before he does, staring at the couch with wide eyes and looking around the living room. Gino looks too, and stifles a groan, when he sees what Jordan must see. The clothes on the floor, and enough blankets on the couch for 30 people.
"Not like that. It's okay,"
Jordan says, hands going up in the air, very fast, swiveling to face Gino with his eyes still wide but now slightly gleeful.
"Say no more. This was totally Max's idea anyway. I knew he shouldn't have disturbed you guys."
This time, Gino doesn't bother stifling his groan, shaking his head.
"No, Geordie, Sydney's sleeping alone."
"Yes, because you're a sweetie and you're going to get him coffee,"
Jordan says, grinning and patting Gino lightly on his cheek.
"Good, Gino. I know Sydney will never admit it, but he definitely likes being pampered."
Gino doesn't have the words to explain how wrong that statement is, on so many different levels. So he just starts ushering Jordan back towards the front door. He despairs a little when Jordan goes easily because,
"Okay, don't worry. I'll leave you guys to your little love nest."
"Bye, Jordan,"
Gino says loudly, and ducks away from another cheek pat just in time. He closes the door with a loud snap and leans against it for a minute, closing his eyes and quietly wondering why the universe has it out for him. And then he jumps, when he hears a high squawk from the kitchen doorway.
"He gone,"
Gino says, looking down at Sid, poking his head curiously around the doorway. Sidney squawks again and waddles in, looking up until Gino has to sigh and smile and lean down to pat Sidney's head reassuringly.
"He just want to take us out. Think we need to get out."
Sidney's chest puffs out, almost on reflex, and Gino laughs and pats him again, not even minding when Sidney twists, slightly out of reach. He doesn't go far, and he's radiating cold air from the yard. Jordan has a point, though. At least for Sidney. Even as a human, Sidney never got out much. And now, he's been a virtual prisoner here as a penguin. There are only so many rocks to gather, and the snow is mostly melting by now. And the only times Gino hears Sidney make happy trills are when he eats krill or watches games on the couch. Gino thinks he'd feel like the most accomplished person in the world if he could get Sidney to always make those sounds, human or penguin. And that's why an idea forms in his head. And some phone calls make it happen, because taking action is way better than examining those feelings of accomplishment.
"We go out," he tells Sidney.
And he ignores his reasonable scepticism to lift Sidney into his car and strap him into the passenger seat.
"You have fun, I promise."
Sidney slips out of his seat almost as soon as they start driving, and Gino knows it's okay to laugh because Sidney's glaring at him, squawking dangerously.
"We do this again. We get you baby seat," Gino says.
And he beams as Sidney hops back onto the seat.
"Hey, no biting when driving. We crash."
He takes Sidney to a rink he's rented for the day. And he can tell the moment Sidney has realised it because he sits up straight in his seat and presses against the car window to stare out. Gino can't stop beaming, which will eventually become a problem because he looks like a crazy person, but there's no one around. He reminds Sidney of this when he ducks down from the window with a squawk, as if he's afraid of getting seen.
"No one recognizes you,"
Gino tells him, parking and smiling like an idiot. Sidney raises his beak, like he knows he's being made fun of.
"Can't sign autographs with flippers."
Sidney squawks loudly, but doesn't snap at him. Which confirms to Gino that this was a good choice. He has a stick and a few pucks in his trunk, from times before the penguin debacle, when he liked to practice late. And Sidney trills in excitement when he sees them.
"Stick too big for you. But you try and steal pucks with feet," Gino says,
and Sidney squawks and trips because he's trying to run through the parking lot and penguins can't run. The cool air of the rink would be almost enough to take his breath away if Sidney's infectious happiness wasn't. The soft, happy trills are back, even before Gino gets a puck on the ice, because Sidney is on the ice, and even though he slips and falls onto his belly right away, it's obvious this is where he belongs.
"Careful,"
Gino says reluctantly, but Sidney is too involved in sliding around on his belly to protest. He kicks himself off from the boards and zooms across the ice like he's skating, like it's natural for him to do that. And Gino watches him with his crazy person smile, leaning on his stick. Eventually, Sidney toboggans into the net and sets himself up there, eyeing Gino with clear purpose. Gino taps pucks in as gently as possible without frustrating Sidney or pissing him off. But Penguin Sidney makes a much better goalie than Human Sidney. He just rolls around squawking in what's probably penguin trash talk, battling at pucks with his wings and his feet. And Gino laughs and watches him move. He is fumbling and clumsy and still somehow good. Faster than penguins Gino has seen on TV. Which is ridiculous, and makes Gino wish he'd put on skates so he can be fast with him. Sidney falls down a lot, but it's like being a penguin has made him better at falling. He seems to bounce and roll, and more often than not, he blocks a puck by falling over onto it with his body.
"You play like a ranger," Gino teases.
And Sidney knocks the puck back to him with his left wing so hard that it stings, bouncing off his sneakered foot.
"No, I know. You a penguin, Sid."
He thinks they would both be happy staying here for hours. And Gino is almost uncomfortable with how much he's missed being on the ice with Sidney, even if it's like this. But they both need food. Sidney's probably starving by now. And Gino could really use some hot chocolate, and the ice time is nearly up anyway. Telling Sid this goes over much better than Gino had expected. Sydney seems almost too happy to throw any tantrums, and that makes Gino feel amazing. They go home, and Gino feeds Sid his beloved krill, eats his own dinner in front of the TV, and smiles when Sydney joins him on the couch unprompted.
"Good day,"
Gino asks, even though he knows it had been. Sydney nods, eyeing him carefully, and then slowly shuffles over the cushions. Gino tries not to stare and pretends to concentrate mostly on the TV. But soon, Sydney is closer to Gino than he's ever been on this couch, as a penguin or a human. It's kind of the best. And Gino nudges his blanket mound over just a little, so that he can feel Sydney's strange, incongruous penguin warmth through the layers.
"Good day,"
Gino answers himself unnecessarily, and Sydney trills. Gino doesn't mean to fall asleep on the couch, and he is absolutely horrified that he does, because he still makes it a point to sleep on the cot in the basement for Sid. Sydney must have fallen asleep too, which is worse. There is still warmth at his side, more warmth than before, and that means Sydney must be getting overheated.
"Sid,"
Gino mumbles, trying to jerk up and frowning, when he realizes the warmth at his side is much larger than a 2.5-foot penguin should be. He's almost much warmer than he should be, whether Sydney is overheated or not, and the warmth is all over, seeping into skin he'd long grown used to being chilled in this house. Gino says,
"Sid,"
again, this time clearer, and twists around enough to see that that warmth at his side is not, in fact, the penguin that was formerly there. Instead, it is Sydney, human, 5'11" Sydney, warm and sprawled out all over him. And Gino realizes, a little hysterically, stark naked.
"Sydney,"
Gino says, because there's the universe spitting on him, and then there's the universe laughing at him, and this is a twisted combination of both. Sydney mumbles in his sleep and tries to twist his head under his own armpit, which doesn't work because he is human. Gino hisses and wrenches his arm free from under Sydney's naked, very naked ribcage and puts it on Sydney's neck, because he's going to hurt himself like that, and that is not happening on Gino's watch, while Sydney is on top of him. It takes a few more, increasingly desperate repetitions of Sydney's name to get him to wake up and realise he's human again. When that happens, his first physical act as a human is to topple off the couch, sprawled on the floor, while Gino glares up at the ceiling and wonders what he did in a past life to deserve this. Underneath the despair of having all that warm, and Sydney's so warm, how did Gino never know that until now? Skin, just right there, closer than it had ever been in the locker room. There's also relief bubbling up again. Sydney is human. Gino can play his game against Washington without having to worry about Ovi dressing Penguin Sydney up in a ridiculous outfit and taking pictures of him. This is a very, very good thing. And Sydney is still very, very naked.
"Oh my God,"
Sydney says breathlessly. And Gino thinks he'd be screeching if he were a penguin, which is a stupid thing to think because he's not a penguin anymore. He's a human. He's a naked human. And his voice sounds wonderful. Gino never ever thought he'd regret getting to cuddle Penguin Sid, but he almost does right now, if only for how much more he wants to do to naked Sid than cuddle. "I'm sorry," Sydney is babbling in several different ways. Gino thinks he's lucky to get the gist of it.
"So sorry, I'm..."
"Blanket," Gino says, finally able to think. And he throws one from his collection onto Sydney, covering him up. Sydney blinks, looking a bit dazed. And Gino gently adds,
"Is cold in here."
"Right," Sydney says, "and I'm human again. I'm human and, oh God, it's really cold in here." Sydney stands up quickly, wrapping the blanket tight around him, and practically sprinting to the kitchen. When he comes back, he looks sheepish and he's blushing slightly. And Gino wonders if he can get away with staring up at the ceiling again, because how is he supposed to deal with blushing?
"Sorry,"
Sydney says again.
"You shouldn't have... It's still really cold in here. You shouldn't have kept it that cold. You're going to get sick."
He actually sounds like he's trying to scold. Like when he goes out to eat with the team and tries to lecture everyone about using butter on their dinner rolls. Gino leans forward on the couch and just shakes his head at Sydney, helplessly watching him blush harder.
Not sick. You get sick if you hot. I drink lots of hot chocolate. Stay warm.
Yeah, Sydney says, a little dismissively, and he wraps the blanket tighter around him. I should... clothes. Maybe a shower? Snow is a really bad substitute for soap, and I hope I didn't get fleas. Do penguins get fleas?
Gino shakes his head more. Penguins have feathers, not fur.
I know, but never mind. Sydney's shoulders are up by his ears, which are stupidly pink. And Gino hadn't thought about imagining this moment, but he should have known it would be this awkward. He doesn't know how to form words, really, without blurting out how badly he wants Sydney back on the couch with him, and how bad it is that he wants that. Now maybe he's wanted that for a while. And Christ, Sergei is going to be so smug about this. So, Sydney says, at the same time Gino stands up, letting all the blankets drop.
I clean up and go, he says, a little stiff.
And Sydney stares at him for a full minute before blinking and shaking his head. Oh, no, you don't have to, I can.
Then I go, Gino says.
And Sydney makes a face but ducks his head, clenching the ends of his blankets tight in his fists. Oh, he says, in a tone Gino can't translate. And damn it, why was he so much better understanding Penguin Sid? Gino nods, thinks about walking over, and maybe patting Sydney on the back in farewell, like he'd do after a practice. Then thinks better of it.
Bye, Sid,
Gino says quietly, grabbing his keys and starting for the door. And Sydney says, bye. And then quickly, wait! Gino feels really, really stupid about the hope that wells up in him because all Sydney says is, thanks, Gino. Softly, like it'd be a trill in penguin speak. Gino smiles, can't help but smile, when Sydney is looking at him like that, and he says,
no problem, Sydney.
And thinks Sergei would hit him for meaning it. Sydney disappears for a week, which is not entirely surprising. He isn't completely incommunicado, texting the guys a bit, and Gino too. I still have thumbs, don't worry, Gino receives. And it makes him smile like an idiot in the locker room, which is the worst place to smile like an idiot. Geordie knocks shoulders with him and also grins like an idiot, but that's just how Geordie grins all the time, so Gino can't tell if he's being mocked or encouraged. He doesn't know which is worse. Gino assumes Sydney's getting his life back in order, letting his family and other friends know that he's alive, and making up excuses where Gino failed to. Gino himself settles back into his own life easily enough, spending extra time with Dixie and Jeffrey, and feeling ridiculously guilty for ignoring them for so long. He doesn't feel like he would have done anything differently, because that's pointless since he wouldn't have. But he does feel bad, and he spends a precious off day just with them. It's ridiculously difficult to not drive past his house and continue on to Sydney's every day. But Gino mostly manages. He still itches to go over to check on him, but he did that before Sydney was a penguin too, so it's not that weird. And it's better now that Sydney's still talking to him, though it's mostly pointless little jokes about never eating seafood again or asking him if it's weird that he kind of misses his basement nest.
Make bed nest,
Gino advises, and then gets the image of sleepy Sid curled up among piles of blankets in his head. And it's really not normal to be attracted to that image, and it's not fair. Sydney surprises them by showing up to practice, and surprises them more when he agrees to go out after. They have a game tomorrow, so everyone takes it fairly easy. But that just gives them more chances to give Sid and Gino pointed sober looks and giggle at them, because everyone who plays hockey is actually 12. Gino is sure that Geordie had told everyone about dropping in on their morning after. And Sydney is just clueless, has no idea why Max keeps knocking him into Gino in their booth, or why Geordie gives Flower a heavy look when he loops his arm around Sid, probably the only one at the table who can truly get away with that.
Don't disappear again, Flower tells him very sternly.
And Sydney nods and shoots a look at Gino. A small, secret smile makes Gino feel warm from the inside out. Gino looks down at his first and only beer, and wishes he could turn it into vodka with sheer willpower. Game or no game. You're still a penguin, concussion or no. Don't forget it.
I won't, Sydney says quietly and then louder, because sometimes he is dumb, he adds. And Gina won't let me anyway.
That gets the whole table laughing. And Sydney laughs along because he's actually dumb more often than not. And Gina wants to slide out of their booth and into a puddle of shame on the floor. But it's really, really good to hear Sydney laugh too. So he sighs and drinks his beer and tries to make the tension in his shoulders roll out with good company. It's an early night, which Gina is absurdly grateful. But he can't escape fast enough to avoid Sydney calling out for him. And really, he doesn't want to avoid him.
I'm still not really supposed to drive too much, and I left my car at the rink, so can I? And Gina says, yes, very quickly, because sometimes he is dumb too, even more often than Sydney.
Thanks, Sydney says, grinning quick and bright and hopping into Gina's car. Sydney doesn't talk much, which Gina is both relieved and unhappy about because he doesn't know what to say, but he doesn't want Sydney to feel awkward around him. Gina feels awkward enough for both of them, really. But Sydney just fiddles with the heating. I'm always cold now, he says peevishly, huddling in his seat. And Gina swallows hard because Sydney doesn't feel cold. He's radiating heat like a furnace. And Gina is as far up against his car door as he can be and still drive. And he can feel the heat like a second skin. Sydney tells him not to bother dropping him off at his car. He'll get it in the morning.
Actually, Sydney says a few minutes later, and Gina glances over and watches him make a face, probably at himself. Can we just go to your house? Mine still smells like fish, and I can't get it warm again, and I have to get new freezers because the old one's pretty much shot, so...
Of course, Gina says,
because the lack of freezers isn't a proper justification for not wanting to be home, and Sydney doesn't have to be defensive with him ever.
Thanks,
Sydney says again, flashing him another smile. Gina smiles back, and hopes it looks normal and not desperate like he still feels. He has to stop being like this around Sydney, because it's ridiculous. And at some point, Sydney's going to notice and feel bad, and Gino never wants that. It's Gino's problem, not Sydney's. And it's just another thing he has to figure out. Now that he doesn't have to solve any best friend penguin problems. This should be a piece of cake compared to that. He had solved that problem just with cuddling. Also, Sydney says, after another few silent minutes, my house is really big and empty. It's really stupid. And I was thinking of moving back in with Mario before the whole, you know, the penguin thing. But now... He breaks off, ducking his head, but not before Gino can catch a frown, which he doesn't like at all. Gino takes a deep, inward breath and tells himself it's time to be a big boy and stop pouting and do what he was always meant to do with Sydney, which is be a good friend.
Now what, Sid?
Hot chocolate, Sydney answers, and Gino blinks and is sure he misunderstood. But Sydney shakes his head and points through the windshield. We should get hot chocolate, Gino.
Why?
Gino asks, which he thinks is a reasonable question. But Sydney just shakes his head more and grins at him. Because you like it, let's go. So they pull over and get hot chocolate at the 24-hour Dunkin' Donuts that Gino has never stepped foot in before. They sit at a small magenta table, and their knees knock together, which is really stupid. But Sydney smiles into his cup, and talks a mile a minute about their practice. Too fast for Gino to understand everything, but happy enough that Gino doesn't really care.
You should have told me, Sydney says on the way out to the car, in a deserted, chilly parking lot, where Gino's mood has finally lifted.
His heart still feels too big for his chest when he looks at Sydney, and it feels doubly so now, with Sydney looking at him like that. Another look he can't interpret on human Sid, but one he knows means something important.
Told you what?
That the hovering. Gino tries and fails not to bristle at the word, but Sydney gives him a playful small shove up against his car, like they're on the ice and he's being chirped. That the hovering meant you wanted to date me. Gino freezes, and his car keys fall to the concrete with a clink. Sydney is looking at him carefully, biting his bottom chocolate-stained lip. Gino can't meet his eyes.
What?
Colby said it a long time ago, but I didn't believe him, Sydney says thoughtfully. But then you saved my ass with the penguin thing, and you let me bite you, and sorry, by the way, though I don't think I hurt you that badly. I don't think I could hurt you too badly, even if I turned into a shark, or a panther, or a coyote. Ugh.
Sid,
Gino says slowly.
What are you saying?
I'm saying thank you, Sydney says, clear and calm, like he's been practicing in front of a mirror. And I'm saying that I don't like my house without you in it, even though it has a nest. Whatever. And that you were amazing, and I was a dick. And I like you hovering because it means you... He clams up, shaking his head and pressing his mouth together, like he's going off script and can't figure it out from here. Gino, as always, steps in to help.
I not hover. I care.
It shouldn't be the scariest thing he's ever had to admit, but it kind of is. And then it's worth it, because Sydney smiles, soft and happy, and says, good, me too. Gino takes that as the permission it definitely is, to reach out and touch him. And Sydney leans into the touch, even though they're not on the ice and no one has scored any goals. But when he pulls Sydney in and kisses Sydney's chapped lips and tastes chocolate sweetness and cold and something that is weirdly, stupidly Sydney, Gino feels like he scored 50 goals in one night. The end. Thank you for listening. Author's notes. And then Sydney leaves pebbles in Gino's pockets all the time because, duh, penguins. And someone else should write, Bobby Ryan becomes a duck fic, and do it fast, before he's not a duck anymore. He and Sid form a water bird support group or something, I don't even know.